When you need legal representation, having the right team to represent you is crucial. Since 1958, Norman Deller has helped thousands of clients with their legal matters in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Whether your case is personal injury, estate planning, probate, employment or business law, civil litigation, real estate, or family law, the attorneys at Norman Deller offer years of expertise and knowledge. If you find yourself in need of legal representation, call Norman Deller at 654-0911 or visit normandeller.com. The Law Office of Norman Deller, providing legal excellence you can trust since 1958.
Hi, Jim Duran here, Executive Director of Cypress Place Senior Living in Ventura. Do you have a loved one or a family member with Alzheimer's or dementia? Are you struggling to care for them? If so, we invite you to come by and visit our beautiful assisted living community with a special memory care area for residents with Alzheimer's and dementia. We have spacious apartments that can be rented on a month-to-month basis, either privately or shared, and include 24-hour supervision by our specially trained caregivers. Amenities include 3 gourmet meals daily. We also have housekeeping, laundry, linen service, utilities, transportation, and a full schedule of daily activities that build esteem and nurture the mind, body, and soul. Please come by to see how your family member or loved one can live the life they deserve and how you, once again, can regain your own peace of mind. To schedule an appointment today, please call 650-8000 or you can visit us on our website at cypressplaceseniorliving.com.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Gray Matters, brought to you by Cypress Place and the law offices of Norman Dowler. And now your hosts, Sherry Kerman and Jim Duran.
Hey, 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 everybody.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to see you again.
It's good to see you too, Jim. Everything is good. Having a good week. Had a good week.
Incredible week.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. You just graduated from something pretty special, didn't you?
I just did. I just graduated from Bible College at Channel Islands Bible College and Seminary.
And you have what degree now?
Well, I have a AA in Biblical Studies, and I have a BA in Ministry.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Very exciting.
Thank you.
So you're certifiable.
I am, really.
Well, welcome, everybody, to another great, great hour. We're so excited to be here. We have another action-packed hour for you. And our first guests today, my dear friend Deborah Sutherland. How are you doing, Deborah?
I'm doing just fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. Thank you. And thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for asking.
Absolutely. And Deborah, you've got with you Edie Brown, who is the regional director of Region 5 of the Congress of Seniors. Welcome, Edie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
We are so happy to have you both in the studio because it's a pretty special month. This month for, especially for the radio show Gray Matters, because it is Elder Abuse Prevention Awareness Month. You know, every time we say it's just slightly different. Have you noticed that, Deborah?
But it's all right. It's okay. What matters is that it sticks in your brain that you know that elder abuse can be prevented and prevented by awareness of what's going on around
and
you.
And June is the month to focus on all that awareness. And so that's why we've asked you lovely ladies to join us again and talk to us about some of the things that are going on. So, you know, Deborah, you were here last week, I think.
It was a couple of weeks ago.
And we talked a little bit about self-neglect, which isn't technically elder abuse, but does fall into this whole month of being aware of what's going on. And today, though, we wanted to focus on some of the signs, some other signs of elder abuse. So talk to us, ladies.
Well, as you know, there are several types of elder abuse. There's the physical, the sexual, the financial, the emotional, and then, of course, even though it's not recognized legally, I still think the self-abuse is, you know, the self-neglect is terribly abusive.
Sure.
But when we look at things like physical abuse, that can encompass a lot of things. We can think of things in institutions. You know, the headlines come up, you know, a patient dies in a facility or is discovered to have terrible bed sores and such. Those are very obvious signs of physical abuse in a institutional setting.
Right.
But those things also happen in a home care setting. Many times the caregiver is is so overwhelmed by what happens with the person they're caring for, and it's usually a loved one, a family member.
Right.
And they strike out in ways that could be cutting back on food, cutting back on medications. There could be the physical hitting, pushing, bruising, grabbing. So some of the things you want to look for, excuse me, are things like unexplained bruising.
Okay.
Now, we all know that as we get older, our skin gets a little more delicate, and it's a lot easier to bruise.
Absolutely.
But I'm not talking about the little bruises.
We're talking about
big bruises.
Right. Or all of a sudden, more bruises than what you might have normally seen.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There are things of, has there been a sudden weight change? Now, it could be a loss of weight, or it could even be an increase in weight.
Even an increase.
Because one of the things is poor nutrition. If I'm feeding you good things, vegetables and good proteins, you're going to maintain a decent weight.
Right.
But if I stop feeding you, you're going to lose weight. But what if I feed you nothing but junk food?
Right. Okay.
All right. What if you're a diabetic and all I'm giving you are sweets
right,
and sugars?
Right. Donuts and things.
Right.
Okay.
So there could be an increase in weight. So you want to look for changes.
Changes.
You also want to look at how does the person act?
The caregiver or the person receiving the care?
The person receiving the care.
Okay.
Because there's going to be signs. If they're normally very talkative and happy and such, but when the caregiver's around, they become quiet, withdrawn.
It could be fear.
That could be fear.
Right.
It could be a very big fear. So there's some definite things in there.
And, you know, you said something even before we started this list that I wanted to go back to, and because I think it's important that you said that sometimes often the caregiver is a family member. And they get overwhelmed. And so I want everybody to understand out there that it may not be an evil, horrible, mean person doing this. It may be a very decent person doing this that just is overwhelmed.
Well,
and then the flip side of it is, though, that even if it is because you're overwhelmed, it doesn't matter, it's still abuse.
It's still abuse. I can understand why. If we hear the talk about the sandwich generation,
mm-hmm.
where you're dealing with your children who may be coming home because they've lost their jobs, mm-hmm. and now you've got your adult children and their children living with you. At the same time, you have your parents.
That's right.
Who now can no longer live.
Mm-hmm.
They're falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're coming to live with you, or you've got...
And we are in an economy right now where you better be very, very careful about what you're doing or not doing at work, because that could absolutely be at risk as well.
Absolutely. So mm-hmm. we're under a lot of pressures.
Mm-hmm.
And human beings do not deal with pressure well. We drink. We take drugs. We strike out violently, which is all unfortunate. Now, we're lucky here in Ventura County that we do have some resources for caregivers. If you have a parent or a loved one with dementia,
mm-hmm.
the Alzheimer's Association has wonderful caregiver programs.
Mm-hmm.
Camarillo Healthcare District has
the
a
wellness
wonderful...
And Wellness and Caregiver Center of Ventura County.
Absolutely. So
yes.
There are resources. But the best thing to do is to reach out to your friends and other family members and say, help.
Well, and help, and the other thing to remember is respite care. You know, I talk about this a lot with my clients, and that is, think about what they tell you when you're in an airplane. If the oxygen mask comes down, put yours on first before you help anybody else with theirs. So you have to think, why? Why? Because if I don't have my oxygen mask on and I pass out, how am I going to help anybody else? So you have to follow that with mm-hmm. this as well. We all know about the caregiver syndrome, right, Jim? Where
Absolutely.
the caregiver dies before the person they're caring for because they've worked themselves literally to death.
Absolutely.
And there's this sense of, I can't leave him. I can't put him in a facility. I have to take care of him. I have to do it. There's no respite. If you're a caregiver out there, I cannot stress to you the importance of seeking out respite care. And Deborah, you named some great facilities and great organizations in the community. There's Senior Concerns in Thousand Oaks. There's the Healthcare District and the Wellness Center here in Camarillo. There's places all over, and they do provide respite. They provide adult daycare, and they provide respite care.
And if you don't feel that though any of those agencies we've mentioned would be your help, you can contact the Area Agency on Aging. They have a wonderful information and referral service.
Perfect.
And they know of respite services.
Right.
That
right.
might fit your circumstances.
Deborah, I want to go back to something that you said earlier in regards to, you know, people not getting fed. Now, would that be purposely? Like you said, all of a sudden they're losing weight because they're not being fed properly. At one point they were feeding them. Do the caregivers go into such an emotional breakdown that they just purposely don't feed their loved ones?
I would like to think that doesn't happen, Jim, but people lash out in ways that, yeah, they'll say, I can't afford to feed this person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's too much money. It's
gotcha.
Whatever. So I've got to cut back.
Okay.
And they may not realize what they're doing.
Right. It's not necessarily an intentional thing. Like, I'm going to punish you and I'm not going to feed you. It's more like, you know, I got to make ends meet here. This isn't working out, so I'm going to take this route to do it. Well, you know, in regards to elder abuse, I want to ask you because, you know, it's a big question. Let's say that, you know, we run into these situations where all of a sudden we have a family member come in and they say to us at Cypress Place, they say, I really need to move my mom and my dad in, whatever the case is. And we ask, is there a dementia diagnosis? And they said, yes, they were diagnosed with dementia a couple of years ago. They actually have Alzheimer's. They were diagnosed a couple of years ago. Where's mom or dad today? Well, they're living at home. With who? By themselves. Is that considered abuse?
Neglect.
I would say neglect.
Okay.
I would say so from a legal standpoint. I'd say probably as well, because I'm not sure about the legal requirement.
Right. And you know, I don't mention this to fault any of the listeners that might be in that predicament, but to make you aware that, you know, when there's a dementia diagnosis, there's help that needs to be given to this resident.
Right.
In one way, shape, or form. And
right.
You can't allow them to live alone, even if they're in the early stages. They need to be supervised, right?
I agree, totally. And there's just so many other things. But, you know, I know that we have some time constraints.
Yes, we do.
I want to go on to things like the financial abuse.
Let's do a couple minutes of that. And then I want to talk about something called silver circles that you had spoken. So let's do a quick minute on financial abuse.
On the financial abuse, we are very fortunate, again, that we have a FAST team here in Ventura County, which stands for Financial Abuse Specialist Team.
Yep.
And it's been around for quite a few years. And this group is comprised of many different people, from law enforcement, the FBI, Department of Insurance, attorneys,
bankers, real estate, ministry. It's multidisciplinary.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I was really glad when the bankers came on, because when it comes to financial abuse, bankers are one of the first lines of defense, because we've all heard the stories of somebody coming in with a senior and saying, write out a check for... Or all of a sudden they're starting to do the deposits and withdrawals for the senior, and you never see the senior.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's some discrepancies.
Or even if they bring the senior in, sign here, Mabel.
Yeah.
Go ahead and remember we talked about this. You need to take this money out now.
Right.
Yeah.
Or all of a sudden the caregiver is handling all of the financial issues. And that is, is that a red flag? Totally. And now the bankers have been empowered to report.
Well, not just empowered.
They're mandated. Absolutely.
They get into a serious trouble if they don't report this abuse or suspected abuse. And they are getting better at looking at what those signs are and doing the research.
Yeah, I've been very happy about that.
And this FAST team is a phenomenal team.
Yeah.
They are through Senior Concerns, if I'm...
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
I remember when the FAST team first started, I was working with Gray Law at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just remarkable to see how it's grown.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now... Gray Law is now the one who is supervising the
Perfect.
FAST
so they
program.
Can, they can reach Gray... So, go ahead, Jim.
So just real quick, so if there's a caregiver out there taking care of seniors, Family need to get involved, friends need to get involved, and making sure that all the banking's not being done all the time, and that they're not going out making financial decisions based on them. And when power of attorney starts coming up,
you gotta watch that.
You have to be careful with powers of attorney. They're great because they're easy to put in place. They don't involve the court. It's a pretty simple transition of financial power. That's the plus.
Right.
That's also the minus
because
every situation of elder abuse that we see, hands down, there's a power of attorney
right.
put in place because you can pick them up. You can pick them up anywhere, unfortunately, right. to take them in front of the notary and get them signed. So you have to be very careful and make sure. And if you are putting together this kind of a plan, don't do it with the stationary stuff. Go see an attorney.
Absolutely.
You know, let's come on in. Let's talk. And because I'll make sure that it's put in place in a way that it's not going to get attacked because I'll know it's good.
And if a caregiver that is not related to you wants to be your power of attorney, then you better start calling family members and start getting an attorney and start getting some advice on that.
There's some other issues with that. And we could do 5 hours on
that. Yeah, we could.
So and we're not going to. But.
So quick, we've got 1 minute. Silver circles. Edie, what is it?
Silver circles were really organized to prevent the isolation that people experience when they live alone. After the loss of a loved one, they're by themselves, and frequently that leads to neglect because of the depression that sometimes sets in.
And is this a county program or it's a state program?
Right now it's in a pilot situation at the Ventura Marina Mobile Home Park.
Okay, and if someone wants to become involved in it, because we are unfortunately running out of time, how do we become involved?
They can call me at 676-1877.
Okay, 676-1877. We'll put that up on our website as well at graymattersradio.com. And I'm assuming that it's a program where the seniors are checking in on each other.
Right. They check on each other at least once a day. Other than that, the group is their own. They can do whatever they like with it. The one at the marina have paired off, and now they've asked to go beyond the 7 original members.
Perfect. I love it. That's great. I'm sorry, ladies.
You just have to bring us back.
And we will. You'll come back for sure. Thank
Absolutely.
You. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
There's so much out there.
Oh, a lot. So much.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we have another great guest. We're going to talk about some things, and it's all going to fall into elder abuse because we're talking about Alzheimer's and end-of-life decisions and the Keck study, if I'm saying it correctly. So we'll be right back. Thanks a lot.
Great to have you on the show.
All righty. Good.
Hi, Jim Duran here, Executive Director of Cypress Place Senior Living in Ventura. Do you have a loved one or a family member with Alzheimer's or dementia? Are you struggling to care for them? If so, we invite you to come by and visit our beautiful assisted living community with a special memory care area for residents with Alzheimer's and dementia. We have spacious apartments that can be rented on a month-to-month basis, either privately or shared, and include 24-hour supervision by our specially trained caregivers. Amenities include 3 gourmet meals daily. We also have housekeeping, laundry, linen service, utilities, transportation, and a full schedule of daily activities that build esteem and nurture the mind, body, and soul. Please come by to see how your family member or loved one can live the life they deserve and how you, once again, can regain your own peace of mind. To schedule an appointment today, please call 650-8000 or you can visit us on our website at cypressplaceseniorliving.com.
When you're considering a reverse mortgage, at Wells Fargo, we're with you. If you're a homeowner at least 62 years of age, a reverse mortgage may help you convert your home equity to tax-free loan proceeds. Contact a reverse mortgage consultant today. Wells Fargo. Together, we'll go far. Consult a tax advisor. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., is an equal housing lender. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., member FDIC.
For more information and to find out how a reverse mortgage could benefit you, call 866-398-5638. That's 866-398-5638.
Hi, this is Sherry Kerman of Norman Dowler, the law firm you can trust to get it right, proudly representing the people of Ventura County honestly, ethically, and with great integrity for over 50 years. Norman Dowler is among the preeminent law firms in Ventura County and has a team of dedicated professionals who consistently exceed the expectations of our clients. Legal matters are no laughing matter. When you're faced with a legal crisis, you want the best representation. Norman Dowler, 654-0911 or visit normandowler.com.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And now back to Gray Matters with your hosts, Sherry Kerman of Norman Dowler and Jim Duran of Cypress Place.
You're being quiet today, Jim.
No, you know what? I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I can't hear it today. My mind is going. You know what?
I'll tell you.
I was thinking. I was thinking about the silver circle. Is that what we were talking about in that last minute?
Yes.
And you know, I was thinking, when you live alone, boy, you need something like that. You need it.
Yeah, I mean, for so many different reasons. I mean, physically, if something happens to you, you know that someone's going to be checking up on you. And they talk, there's so many studies that they talked about isolation leads to depression, leads to self-neglect, which is, it's a form of elder abuse. I mean, it's one of the things that we're being aware of, that we need to know it's a real problem.
Right.
And to know, so if you have somebody checking up on you, if you physically get hurt, they're going to find you. And you're going to have that interaction.
See, in our assisted living building, we have care managers that are checking on you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But in our independent living building, we don't have any care in our independent living building. So we created several years ago a buddy system.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has a buddy. And if they don't see their buddy at the meal, they go check
on
them.
They go, perfect.
And at least once a day, they have to make contact with their buddy to make sure they're
perfect.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. That's great. And that's the way to do it.
The Cypress Circle is what we call it now.
There's the Cypress Circle. I love it. I love it. We are now in the studio with Marcia Anderson. How are you doing, Marcia?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for coming on the show. So I know you work for the county, but that's not really why you're here.
Right.
You're here because of some personal experiences that you wanted to, that we thought were really interesting and you were willing to share with everyone in hopes that that maybe another family can avoid some of the issues you had to deal with, or maybe it's a little bit easier for them. So you were a caregiver for your father?
Yes, for my dad.
Mm-hmm. Who had Alzheimer's?
Yes.
Okay. And, well, talk to me.
Well, at the time, this was in, he was diagnosed in, we noticed changes in 2001, but he was really kind of diagnosed in 2002, and we had a really wonderful primary care doctor that was a gerontologist in the valley, and he was very supportive. And I said to Dr. Grabati, you know, I wish there was something I could do to help other families to have to go through, to avoid going through what we went through. And so he suggested that we contact USC Keck School of Medicine, that they have an ongoing Alzheimer's research program. And that's what I did. And it just so happened my dad's sisters were visiting at the time, and they were very supportive, because I call this the unpleasant, you know, unpleasant but very important topic. And it's hard to hear, and it's hard to
say,
make this kind of decision, you know, to imagine doing this with your loved one. But we decided to call Keck, and we made arrangements and signed all the papers before my dad passed away, when his life, we could see the end of his life looming.
Because Alzheimer's still, I think they I was just reading 80-90% accurate diagnosis while alive, but it's still a disease that you cannot get 100% diagnosis until there's an autopsy of the brain, right?
Right, because you're ruling everything else out, and then you're hoping, then
that,
it's got to be that.
That's it, right. It's a diagnosis of exclusion, right?
And I grew up in the 60s, and I knew a family, maybe knew one family that had someone, you know, a grandmother, a great-grandmother that was senile.
Right.
But now it's like every family has somebody that has some form of dementia or something. So something has definitely changed, and it's not changing for the better.
No.
So, you know, research,
I can't,
you know, research is so fundamental. So we made these arrangements, and they gave us a phone number to call. And when my dad passed away in 2004, we called this phone number, and they sent two very nice, respectable gentlemen, and they picked my dad up, and they took his body to USC, and they did an autopsy, and they removed portions of his organs and his brain and his spinal column, and then they delivered him the very next day. We could have had an open coffin. It doesn't interfere with anything to Forest Lawn, and, you know, we proceeded with our – it didn't interfere with anything to do with
so
our family.
So it didn't hold anything up?
No.
It didn't stop you from having a service any way that you wanted
Not
to have it?
Not at all.
It was done very quickly – respectfully,
yes.
Which is nice to know.
And the thing that was so valuable to us was that 4 months later, they sent us this comprehensive report. I can't understand most of it because it's in, you know,
medical
yeah. But it's interesting to read, but it's 4 pages long, and the bottom line was on the last page, you know, the final diagnosis was that he had definite Alzheimer's.
Right.
So that was such a relief to us to know that there wasn't something other, you know, a brain tumor, something we could have done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was a decision our family made, and we're very grateful.
And you said your family came on board. I mean, everybody pretty much came on board with this decision.
Yes, nobody was opposed to it, which was fortunate.
I'm looking at, you know, and I'm thinking about the residents that we have at Cypress, and, you know, we have a lot of memory care, a lot of people with Alzheimer's or dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you think, gosh, I'd love to give them this information, the family members.
Correct.
Because I know that they want a cure for this. I know that they want to know.
You
know, what we can
right.
do better.
Because we can't cure it. We can't stop it, right? All
right.
we can do is slow it down a bit.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, and try and figure out really where
well, they're
it's
trying
coming
to
from.
Figure out. Right,
yeah.
right.
But right
exactly.
now, all we can do is slow it down.
And so often, people are so, you know, prone to, they want to donate their body parts. You know, they put it on their driver's license.
Right.
Yes, take my eyes, take my heart. But you're 85 years old. Nobody's going to want your organs. You know, that's what, as
right.
assumed, nobody's going to want, I'm broken
right.
down. But here's an opportunity that someone could benefit society in a very magnificent way, really.
Absolutely.
Right, right. So let's put that out there. And do you have contact information for Keck?
I do. I did.
Okay.
I do. I brought their website. I don't know, the HTTP /ADRC.USC.EDU.
Okay.
And that stands for the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center.
Perfect. So adrc.usc.edu. I will absolutely post that also at graymattersradio.com so that people can get in touch. You know, not just
phone
the and a phone number too.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
It's 323-442-5775.
5775, and we will get that up on the website as well. 323-442-5775. I'm going to put something out there. You know, a lot of time we are diagnosing some of these dementias earlier on. We're getting better at early diagnosis. And remember that the diagnosis doesn't mean that you've lost the capacity to make decisions itself. The diagnosis just means something's, depending upon where along the line the diagnosis is, but if it's an early diagnosis, you may still be, quite possibly still be fine to make a lot of decisions yourself. So assuming that's you're in that place, you could also say, this is what I want to happen when I'm gone.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
So if we've got a situation where the patient is no longer able to make the decision themselves, then the family can come together and talk about it. But if the patient is still has the capacity to make decisions, you know, you can make a great gift to medicine by agreeing to this.
Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, I want to ask you, because I think it's important that people know, our listeners know, that when you have dementia, when you have Alzheimer's, there's signs, obviously, that you notice in advance. I mean, most of the people that come back to Cypress Place after they've gone for a doctor visit, they'll come back with mild cognitive impairment. So it's MCI, the diagnosis. So it's beginning stages of dementia.
Of something, right?
Of something. And so here we are, we're in this place, and we notice it. That's why we send them out to the doctor. The family notices, they're saying something's wrong. Well, those are the times that those decisions can still be made.
Absolutely.
At those times.
And
yes.
That's when those decisions should be made. That's when you want to get all of those things in order.
Right.
So that you're in control.
And why it's so critical that we go to the doctor as we get older, that we check in with our physicians and they do those
Absolutely.
Exams and so on and so
right.
forth.
Right, and they have a base mark. You know, they have some kind of
There's a baseline
right.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
You said before he got diagnosed, you said that we saw the signs.
Yes.
What were those signs?
Yes, he started calling us and telling my brother that he couldn't find his way home. You know, we got him a GPS.
That is a sign. Mm-hmm.
He would get confused. He would forget about things that we did together. And so this, we noticed the changes like in 2001, and we took him to see the doctor in April of 2001. And interestingly, in the middle of 2002, I started like a journal. I just wanted to kind of keep track. So I started, everybody in the family would write down. It was in an obvious place in our house. And each family member, if we noticed something that was significant, we would just put the date and the time and who wrote, you know, sign our name, and we'd write down what it was. So we have this notebook, really, of his journey, basically up until the minute that he died.
Wow, that's what insight and what foresight. That's phenomenal, Marcia, that you were able to do that emotionally, that you were able to do that willing, and that your family, I'm thrilled that your family was all so strong and together.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, that was in 2002 we started making those notes. And he was driving in January of 2002. And then he broke his hip in June of 2002. And it seemed like that things really deteriorated from that point. Mm-hmm. Although he did make a trip by himself to Connecticut at Christmas. At Christmas on the plane. But we put a little lanyard around his neck, just a reminder of what flights he was on in case he got confused. And he made it there and made it back.
Wow. That's great.
And then he died in September of 2004. So we didn't have to, you know, endure this very long. It was really, you know, what we called it God's perfect plan and timing, really, because my dad was a lifelong believer. And he told us he was tired and, you know, he wanted to go be with the God. So, you know, it was like, I'm glad that we didn't have to, you know, like the Reagan family endure this for
years,
you know,
and it can
years.
Be years and years and years sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's interesting what you said, too, is as soon as they did the autopsy, they brought the body back. Because I know that there's a lot of people that get really, they're really, they have these weird feelings about the body has to be there, it has to be intact. But, you know, in my belief, it's you're gone from the body as soon as you die.
That's
for me,
what
it's
my dad
easier
believed.
To receive that. Yeah. So, but you know, it's great because the body comes back. So you can still send the body out for research and the body comes
back. But you don't have to make that decision. Do we have a body to physically bury, or do we do the research?
Right.
It sounds like that decision's not necessary.
Right.
You have them. You can have them both.
I was surprised how early in the day, the next day, they said he's at Forest Lawn. I went, oh my gosh,
that is
right.
Really
he's
awesome.
There already.
That
so.
Is really awesome.
Well, that's important. That's great because that means that they really, they understand the importance of the research, obviously, but they also, it means that Keck School of Medicine understands the importance of the family.
Absolutely.
And that's crucial.
Mm-hmm.
That's crucial. You know, I want to change sort of directions a little bit, because there was something else that you and I had been talking about beforehand, and that had to do with the end of life and feeding.
Yes.
Right? And that's something I think is really important too. You hear, one of the decisions that you make in a healthcare directive is, if I'm in a irreversible coma, persistent vegetative state, if death is imminent, if it's coming, you know, and all we're doing is delaying the inevitable. Do I want my life, do I want life-sustaining treatment to continue? And life-sustaining treatment is the hydration, the food, and everything like that. So the question then becomes, I have some people in my office who say, absolutely not, withdraw it, let me go. But I have people in my office who come and say, no, I don't want to starve to death. And we wanted to spend some minutes talking about that, because it's not really what's going on, is
right,
it?
Right, no. Well, interestingly, when I was going through this whole process, I met a lady, she was a realtor, and she was talking about her husband had died of Alzheimer's. And I said, oh, really? How long did he have the disease? And she said, oh, he only had about a year. I said, well, he couldn't possibly have died from Alzheimer's. I mean, something else must have killed him. She says, oh, yeah, he stopped eating and drinking. And I said, well, didn't you think about putting a feeding tube in? She said, oh, no, he never would have wanted that. And they had made arrangements, and he wasn't about that. And so, you know, so I was kind of horrified because, you bring a baby home from the hospital. If you don't feed it, you know, you're killing the baby. And so I really, really was struggling with this. And so when we took my dad to see Dr. Gorbati, you know, I said, Dr. Gorbati, this is really a hard decision for me. What, you know, the day's going to come. I know that this
I'm
is part of the process.
I'm not going to make this decision. What do I
do? That they're going to, you know, he's not going to want to eat and drink. And so Dr. Gorbati told me that his mom had ovarian cancer and that they decided not to force feed her, and that she died in a relatively short time. And he said, the thing that I need you to know is that you will suffer far more than your father will. It's not a painful process at all.
Right. Actually, they've shown that the body starts to shut down, and it doesn't need hydration. It doesn't need or want food, and putting that there putting it in the body is actually stressful.
Well, him saying
and
those words, force feeding, he said, we decided not to force feed my mother, and that's, you know, she died in a relatively short time. So just saying those words, force feeding, were magical to me, because I knew my dad's decision was not to be prolonged. And force feeding, I mean, feeding him, putting him on a feeding tube. My next door neighbor had done that with her husband, and he lived for 9 years, and he was in a hospital bed, and she was turning him every night, and she was working full time, and they were having sex and drug parties at her house, and she was calling me and saying, can you go check
she
on
She wasn't
him?
The caregivers. She,
they were, yeah. Yeah. The caregivers
just
were.
Just want to put that out there.
Yeah. She
was,
work.
Not having sex and drug parties while her
the
husband.
The caregivers were.
Thank you
caregivers
for clarifying
were. And the
that.
Phone Anytime. Would, and the phone would be off the hook, and she'd call, can you go please check on him? And so, you know, that was her choice, but it lasted 9 years, and it was a grueling ordeal, in my opinion, and I just didn't want to put my dad through that, and our family, you know, he had grandchildren, they were all a part of his day-to-day life, and it was a joyous occasion, all of it was.
Well,
so
when your father passed away, was it because of Alzheimer's, or was there some other condition?
He basically stopped eating,
that
and his body
it.
Just shut down, mm-hmm. and we would offer him, you know, we'd put ice cubes up to his lips, we offered him everything that we possibly could to a certain point, but when he just turned his head, mm-hmm. you know,
he didn't,
we just stopped,
right.
we just, you know.
Yeah. Well, but again, I mean, medicine has shown that when we die, things start to shut down
Correct.
And stop, and you don't want mm-hmm. the hydration or the food. Your body can't process it, and so it just sits there. And think about how you feel when you've had a really huge, heavy meal and it's just sitting there. I would suspect it's something akin to that, because your body's trying to figure out what to do with all this stuff.
Right. And it's just basically existing at that point.
Right.
And you think about it in nature, you know, when animals are ready to die, they just go off and they lie down someplace quiet and by themselves, and they stop eating and drinking, and they just, you know,
they
stop.
Just die.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And
right.
that's what it was like for my dad. It wasn't not an unpleasant process whatsoever. So, you know, it's unpleasant to think about. But it can't be avoided, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of when, it's a matter of if for all of us. So.
Right.
I mean, it's
right.
not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Excuse
right.
me.
Right, yeah. right. And you've had, in your family had a situation too with your grandfather and your grandmother, right?
Yes.
Unfortunately,
yes.
the flip side, maybe that's what made it easier for your family to make the decisions
yes.
you made for
yes.
your dad.
Yes, because my grandmother went into cardiac arrest, and my grandfather had not given it any thought whatsoever. And so he just told the doctors, do whatever you have to do to save her life.
And
they put intubated her, and she was just scribbling. I can remember her scribbling these little notes, you know, you could barely read it, but it said, please let me go, you know. It was just so pitiful, and you know, she lasted mm-hmm. days if not weeks longer. I just remember it was early 80s, and you know, it was just horrible.
Right.
So, you know, my dad didn't have to go through that.
And as you said, you another great statement about they didn't make the plan. They didn't you didn't plan for this. So, again, right now we're sitting here. We have our capacity. We have our health. We have our ability to think through things thoughtfully. Now is the time to put those plans into place with a healthcare directive. That's where you talk about all of that.
Right. And you know what? It's not even about getting dementia and living long, and it could be an accident tomorrow that
oh absolutely
we don't know
absolutely but now is and so now is the
now
time
is
to
the
put
time.
That in place. And I will let everybody know, I say this again to my clients all the time, do not choose someone to be your voice to the doctors if that person is not going to be able to do what you want them to do. If I want to be let go, and my husband says to me, I love you, I know you want to be let go, but I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not emotionally going to be able to tell the doctors, let her go. I'm not naming my husband as my agent.
That's right.
It's not fair to me. And quite frankly, it's not fair to him either.
Absolutely.
So you're going to put somebody in place who's going to be able to make the decision that you want to have made. And when you're being wheeled in on the gurney, or when the Alzheimer is severe, the dementia is severe, it's too late.
That's right. Everybody has a real bossy aunt. Put her in charge. You know, we all have one, right?
That's right.
Put her in. She'll make things.
I always tease with my clients though and say, but don't, you know, don't pick someone on the flip side who's going to trip over that plug too fast.
Right.
You know, you want someone who, or the flip side, if you're someone who doesn't want to be let go, if you want your life prolonged, that's a personal decision and you get to make that decision. But then make sure again, whoever's in charge is in, even if that's not what they would want for them, make sure that they're going to be able to do what you want them to do.
That's right.
It's important. Marcia, you had an incredible experience. And having to deal with this with your father and go through it is not pleasant, but it sounds as though you were in a situation where, as a family, you came together. You were able to make it as positive as you all could.
Yes, I had the support of my brothers. We were all, you know, on the same page and were with my dad up till the very end. So it was, you know, we had no regrets. That's the important
thing.
That
is the important part. You know, you did everything you needed to do for him, and then you were able to help the studies. Do you know if anything that they found with your dad led to anything further, or
I do not
you
know
do
that,
not
no.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Any bit
just
of
have to presume that it did somehow.
Well, sure. Well, every piece of information is going to help, but I was wondering if there was a light bulb moment.
You know, I had a similar situation with my aunt, who was like a mom to me. She worked at Imperial Savings here in Ventura for 13 years as the assistant branch manager. And as soon as the computers came in and they started training on computers, she couldn't retain the information. And so after 13 years, she was terminated. And then she went to another bank, and she couldn't retain the information. And she went to an office, and she just couldn't learn. And what we didn't know at 42 years of age is she had Alzheimer's.
Oh, an early onset.
Early onset.
Early, early onset.
And so anyway, she came home, and she said, "I don't know what to do. I can't, you know, they're firing me." And she didn't understand why. And so she started cleaning houses, and she would come home crying every day. "They're mean to me. She's mean to me. The lady's mean." So I said, "You know, start your own business." And we did. It was called Aunt Sue's House and Office Cleaning. We had it for 12 years. Unfortunately, the first year, she had to stop working because she kept getting lost. She'd stop showing up to houses. She'd forget to clean the room or the bathroom. And then she started getting into car accidents. And as soon as she'd get in a car accident, the police officer would show up and she'd go, "What happened here?" She says, "I don't remember, but it's my fault."
Oh,
you know, and we go, you know, if anything,
which
just
is
say
very
you don't
nice,
remember.
Which is nice. It's an accident. Which is nice of her to be that honest.
Yeah. And, you know, she's such a loving woman, and she ended up falling and getting a blood clot, and at 52 years of age, she ended up passing away. But she was already in adult diapers.
Yeah,
you know, she was independent.
And when was she? When did the early onset happen?
42.
So that's a long time to live with early onset Alzheimer's. 10 years, because usually the earlier it hits, it hits hard and it hits fast.
Well, you know, it's interesting because 42 years of age, by 43, she stopped working. By 44, it started getting really different. And at 45, she was, you know, she had 5 years of being in diapers and walking around, starting to babble and do the things that people with...
Right. With dementia and Alzheimer's.
That's right. What they do.
Marcia, thank you so much for coming and visiting with us and sharing your personal story with
us. I hope
it
reached somebody out there that's listening today that's going through the same thing, and will at least maybe, you know, over dinner with their loved ones, bring it up. You know, what would you think about this? And, you know, someone. It'll touch someone's life.
It's an important conversation to have, and thank you. Thank you.
I would love for you to come and speak to our resident family members and just share with them your experience.
Oh, that would be spectacular.
I think it would be very, very great for them.
All right. We're willing to do that.
We're going
to
have a quick commercial break, and then we will be right back. We'll see you in just a minute.
Hi, Jim Duran here, Executive Director of Cypress Place Senior Living in Ventura. Do you have a loved one or a family member with Alzheimer's or dementia? Are you struggling to care for them? If so, we invite you to come by and visit our beautiful assisted living community with a special memory care area for residents with Alzheimer's and dementia. We have spacious apartments that can be rented on a month-to-month basis, either privately or shared, and include 24-hour supervision by our specially trained caregivers. Amenities include 3 gourmet meals daily. We also have housekeeping, laundry, linen service, utilities, transportation, and a full schedule of daily activities that build esteem and nurture the mind, body, and soul. Please come by to see how your family member or loved one can live the life they deserve and how you, once again, can regain your own peace of mind. To schedule an appointment today, please call 650-8000, or you can visit us on our website at cypressplaceseniorliving.com.
When you're considering a reverse mortgage, at Wells Fargo, we're with you. If you're a homeowner at least 62 years of age, a reverse mortgage may help you convert your home equity to tax-free loan proceeds. Contact a reverse mortgage consultant today.
Wells Fargo. Together, we'll go far. Consult a tax advisor. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, a division of Wells Fargo Bank N.A., is an equal housing lender. Wells Fargo Bank N.A., member FDIC.
For more information and to find out how a reverse mortgage could benefit you, call 866-398-5638. That's 866-398-5638.
Hi, this is Sherry Kerman of Norman Dowler, the law firm you can trust to get it right, proudly representing the people of Ventura County honestly, ethically, and with great integrity for over 50 years. Norman Dowler is among the preeminent law firms in Ventura County and has a team of dedicated professionals who consistently exceed the expectations of our clients. Legal matters are no laughing matter. When you're faced with a legal crisis, you want the best representation. Norman Dowler, 654-0911 or visit normandowler.com.
Hello. My name is Steve Arnold with Arnold Financial Services. Along with my business partner, Kevin Tolsma, we provide over 50 years of combined financial markets experience. There are solutions to your investment dilemmas, even in these volatile times. We would love the opportunity to discuss your financial situation. Please give us a call for a complimentary evaluation appointment. Our number is 805-384-9212. That's 384-9212. 9212. Ask for Steve.
Stephen Arnold and Kevin Tolsma are registered representatives offering securities and advisory services through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor. Member FINRA and SIPC.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And now back to Gray Matters with your hosts, Sherry Kerman of Norman Dowler and Jim Duran of Cypress Place.
And we're back.
We are back.
You know, I wanted to bring up one thing that Marcia talked about after when we were on our commercial break, and that had to do with the Alzheimer's medication.
Yes.
Where there's medication out there that if you are using it early enough, it can slow the progression of the disease. And if I understood her correctly, her dad was on it.
Right.
And it worked but it doesn't stop it. It
right.
just prolongs it. And so they did get to a point of time where with the doctor's support, said we now need to actually take him off of these meds.
Early on it's good,
yeah. And then you get to a point where you need to take the loved
right.
one off and let the disease take its course.
That's right.
Because otherwise, it's this prolonging.
Correct.
She's amazing.
Great lady.
Oh, my gosh.
Great, great lady.
Oh, my goodness. Kevin.
Yes, hello.
Hello, how are you?
How you doing,
very
Kevin?
Good. Yeah, I found that very interesting. I think we all know people that have had Alzheimer's, and that's
yes.
very interesting.
Yes, it is very interesting. Kevin of Arnold Financial Group, one of our sponsors, and we're so glad to have you on the air today. We usually get to see your sweet face, but today you decided to call in.
Yeah, I have a busy day today, so this just worked better for me.
Not a problem. So tell us what's going on in the financial world that we can, some tips for our caregivers and people that are receiving care, our seniors.
Right. Well, you know, last time we had talked about, because it's just we run into this so routinely, where most seniors are on a fixed income, and we're just seeing interest rates not go anywhere. They're still at rock bottom lows, and so we have a lot of people asking us, what can they do? What else is out there? And we touched upon this, but I thought, you know, we probably have enough time today. We could go a little more in depth and just talk a little bit about annuities.
Sure.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Let's do it.
And the thing with annuities is people have, you say the word annuity and a certain thought or image comes up for people. And the reality is that there's a lot of different annuities out there, some good, some bad. The older kind, my grandfather actually sold life insurance and annuities from like the 1920s through the 1970s. And there's been just a lot of evolution with annuities over the years, and it's like a shoe. I mean, you can't say all shoes are bad, but you have to look at the situation, get the size and the style and the type that fits the
right
need and fits the situation.
Don't wear stilettos if you're going on a hike.
Exactly. So a lot
you, do you wear stilettos when you go on a hike, Jim?
I always wear stilettos.
Oh, you do?
Just kidding.
Woo! And we're on the radio, so nobody really knows.
I just got out of an appointment about 15 minutes ago with some clients. I've been talking to them an hour and a half, and they've been clients of mine for about a year. They were referred to me by their CPA, and they've got a bunch of different things, including a couple annuities. And so we got to talking about it even this morning, and they just said, well, annuities don't seem to be a good investment. And I said, well, here's the thing: is the type that you were put in, it just reset to, it's a fixed interest rate annuity. So there's no investment options. It's just you get whatever the insurance company pays.
Okay.
They just set it to the contractual minimum, to 1.5%.
The company did.
The company
Because the company controls what the interest rate is.
On those type of contracts.
Right.
So they said, we want to get growth out of it. Well, the thing that I told them is, going back to your shoe analogy, they needed a sneaker to go jogging, and somebody sold them some other type of shoe that's not conducive for jogging. And I said, that's the issue. You are put, if you wanted growth, this is designed to produce fixed income. And because interest rates are low, I'm not saying what the company did was good, but I kind of understand that we're in a low interest rate environment. So
right.
If you want growth, you need to be in a different type of contract that gives you the ability to have growth, and that doesn't mean you have to go to the other extreme and take all sorts of risk and to go into, put it all into some aggressive growth equity fund. But there's other annuities out there, which they did. We just did the paperwork. You switch over where you've got a choice.
So they were able to just switch it over to a different annuity that was a better fit for them.
Exactly.
And are there tax consequences to doing that?
There can be if it's not done right. Now, in their case, it was what we call a non-qualified contract, which simply means it's not an IRA or any other type of retirement plan.
Right.
But normally, if you just said, okay, I want to cash out and go in a different direction, which is kind of what they were telling me, normally you would have to pay taxes on the accrued interest that's in there.
Okay.
But what we did is, and I don't want to get technical, but there's one word for it. It's a 1035 exchange.
Sure.
And that's just a section of the tax code, section 1035.
Right.
So they're called 1035 exchanges that permit investor to move from one insurance carrier to another. So whether it be a life insurance contract or an annuity contract, you just have to keep the owner and annuitant the same. In fact, that came up. They said, well, maybe we should put this in our living trust. And I said, well, that's a legal question, and I'm not an attorney. You need to speak to somebody like Sherry Kerman.
There you go.
I can help him with it.
And by the way, I did know what a 1035 exchange was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Didn't we all,
okay.
Spence?
I forgot the code section, but when you said 1035, I thought that's when you're going from one like investment to another, and it's a way of avoiding taxes.
Right. So anyways, the point is a lot of people feel like they're kind of tied into whatever they have. And sometimes you are because of surrender fees. And that's something else that's become more competitive. When I came into this business over 20 years ago, we routinely saw 7 to 10 year surrender periods, and not really anything shorter than that.
Meaning if you did some change to it in the first 10 years, you paid penalties.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've seen, because of just the competition that's out there between these companies, we've really seen those shorten quite a bit, and it's now common to find 3 and 4 year surrender periods.
Oh, well, that's nice. So you're not stuck for so long.
Yeah.
A question for you in regards to annuities. What would you recommend being, how old should be the oldest person getting an annuity? Like, is there a certain age where you go, you really shouldn't get an annuity?
That's a hard question to answer, because you've got to look at, well, what other assets does the individual have? Like in the case I dealt with this morning, I mean, we were probably looking at about 1/3 of their investable assets. So it's not like it was all of their investable assets. And so you've got to look at what else is out there, what else can they tap into. especially if you're going to be starting into a new surrender charge period of 3 or 4 years or however long you need to keep.
Well, and don't you have to look at when the annuity is starting to pay out as well? Because if you've got an 80-year-old and the annuity doesn't start to pay out for 20 years, my guess is that's not the right annuity.
Right. Well, the good news is there's really, you know, there was a day and age, especially back when my grandfather was selling these type of things that, or selling annuities, that you actually had to pick the age when you set it up. So you could be 30-something saying, well, I think I might need it when I'm 65, and whatever you put down, you were basically locked into.
Oh, that's interesting.
Those days are over.
Yeah, they don't do, I'd never heard of that. I always knew that it just said when it started to pay out, and it was not an age, it was a number of years.
Right. So there's two types of annuities. There's deferred annuities, which is the type I was talking about. That's where you put money in and you just know that at some point in the future, either in 3 years or 30 years or 7 years, whenever, you're going to start taking money out. You don't need to determine that when you set it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, once you're ready, then you notify the company. So then you go into the second type of annuity, and that's an annuitization. So that's where you're taking whatever money is there that's accumulated, or whatever money you're bringing in, if you're ready to start it now, you would be buying the second type of annuity, and that's where it's going to pay you a fixed amount of income, either per month or per year or per quarter, however you set it up.
Right.
And typically, there's different payout options, but the most common is where someone will do a period year certain of like 10 or 20 years, and for life, which means it'll do at least the greater of those periods. So if you bought one, say, for life with a 20-year period certain, if you died in year 14, then they're still going to have to pay out for the remaining
Kevin,
6 years.
Yep, and we're out of time. How do they reach you to get more information on this? Because this is great stuff, and you should be able to talk to people about it. They can give you a call.
Right. Well, I'll say the number twice for our listeners. It's 805. 384-9212. So
okay.
805-384-9212.
And we'll put that up on our website as well.
Right.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. I'm sorry we're out of time. It was another great show, eh, Jim?
Yeah, great show.
Yep.
Thank you for being
Everyone
here.
Everyone enjoy the rest of your weekend. We will see you next week at noon on Gray Matters.